Let's start with the second game on Sunday, the NFC title game, San Francisco playing host to Green Bay. It's a rematch, just like the Titans-Chiefs game as well, as far as a regular season meeting. To me, you know, looking at this game, knowing how potent the defense is for San Francisco, is it as simple as the Green Bay Packers doing something that they didn't do the first go around and something Minnesota couldn't do last week, and that is to have success on third downs? Because the first go around, 1 of 15 on third down, that's not going to get the job done, and certainly a big reason why that final score was so lopsided in favor of the 49ers in that 37-8 victory.
I think we can dismiss some of what happened in the first game. Aaron Rodgers had his worst game almost of his career, maybe of his career. I don't think we'll see that again. The Packers have become a much better team down the stretch. But I actually think, Johnny, first and second down may be the key, because the Packers can't get into third and longs. That's just going to play in the hands of San Francisco's great pass rush, that terrific front seven, and a pretty good secondary other than Witherspoon, who apparently is going to be benched in the other corner, so from Richard Sherman. So I think the key to this game on offense is going to be Aaron Jones gaining yardage and gaining it on first and second down.
You know, the other part, you brought up Richard Sherman, and certainly here's a guy that got a lot more things written about him when he played for Seattle. But he is certainly looking everything ever bit as the Richard Sherman we have grown accustomed to. And Aaron Rodgers, here's somebody in the previous meetings between Rodgers and Sherman being lined up on the other side. Rodgers avoids throwing anywhere near Richard Sherman. Richard Sherman having an outstanding year. Do you see that being the case as well on Sunday?
Well, I think that when Sherman is matched up with one of the secondary receivers, I could see that happening. But when Sherman is matched up with Devontae Adams, and remember, Sherman tends to stay on the left side of the defense, when Adams is on that side, I don't see how Aaron Rodgers can avoid looking at and throwing to his best receiver. That could be one of the key matchups of this game, and certainly one to keep an eye on.
Hey, Barry, Steve Wrigley here. Thanks for taking the time to join us here on the show. I have a question about Ryan Tannehill. He's one win away from taking the Titans back to Miami in the Super Bowl, where he played a long time for the Dolphins. Do you think he has it in him to lead the Titans to a win in a high-scoring game, or how do you think this thing has to go?
High-scoring would be problematic for Tennessee. That's not the kind of game they want, unless they're getting turnovers. Steve, I think you mean a game in the 30s or even in the 40s, right?
Yes.
Now, that doesn't play into the hands very well. Tannehill, well, you know, I hate to use the phrase, but Tannehill fits perfectly. He needs to manage the game and let Derrick Henry be the main weapon.
Very good. And then there's the numbers out there about what happens when the Chiefs give up less than 110 yards, they're 9-0. When somebody gets more than 110, it goes to 4-4. Do you think at this point of the year that What do you think? We've seen the highlights. If you watch any of the shows, or all anybody's talking about is Derrick Henry. What do you think this challenge brings to the Kansas City defense? And do you think that they're man enough to tackle that guy?
Well, I think every team is man enough to try to do it. But as we saw with the Patriots and especially with the Ravens, they didn't fare very well. The Chiefs are better on defense by a lot from what they had last year. They didn't make the Super Bowl because their defense was so weak. They brought in Steve Spagnuolo. It takes a while for Spag's type of defense to really meld with the players, and it's happened in the last month and a half or 2 months. They didn't look that great last week against Houston early on, but then it looked great in the second half when the game had turned. So I think that Kansas City's defense can at least keep Henry from dominating the game, where he runs for 200 yards, but I don't know that they're going to keep him around 100 yards. I don't think that's going to happen.
You know, you look back at this first go around with the Chiefs, and Patrick Mahomes had been out a few weeks with a dislocated knee, and then his very first game back was against the Tennessee Titans. And in that particular game, there was a stretch there where they couldn't finish drives. But even with that said, you know, here they were lining up for a field goal that could have sent the game into overtime. When you think back to that game and now where the Chiefs are today, you know, what's your thoughts about what the Chiefs are doing right now compared to with Mahomes coming back from that injury?
Yeah, well, Johnny, you start with Mahomes being so much more healthy now. This looks like the Mahomes of last season, who was the league MVP. So that's been a major change. Damian Williams has really come on, especially in these playoffs after being hurt, and that's important. So, some of the defensive players on the Chiefs' side of the ball are playing at full strength now when they weren't back then. So that makes a huge difference for the Chiefs on both sides of the ball. And let me give you a name of somebody who could have an effect in this game who wasn't even with the Chiefs then, and that's Terrell Suggs.
Okay. But now when you look at this coaching matchup, Mike Vrabel's got these guys believing. I mean, once they went to Houston, it was just like guys were just going to keep getting on planes and going. Then you have Andy Reid, who's had a great career coaching, but he's never won the Super Bowl. When you look at this matchup, Reid one win away from getting back to the Super Bowl, and Mike Vrabel in his first playoff season as a head coach getting to the Super Bowl. How do you handicap what those two guys will be going through on Sunday?
What they'll be going through, I think Andy will ignore the past, the fact that he has had trouble in championship games despite what's almost a Hall of Fame resume, and just look at this game. Andy's pretty good at doing that. I think his team will be relaxed. I think last year's loss to the Patriots, and I think you have to say that the Chiefs are probably the better team, certainly on offense they were, in that game. I think they learned a lot from that game. As for the Titans, you know, Vrabel's into three Super Bowls as a player and won them, and he's really gotten this team to believe that anybody can get there and anybody can win, so I don't think they'll be tight. I actually think in the other game we might see a little bit of tightness out of Shanahan and LaFleur, but I don't think so in this game.
Yeah, you go back and you talk about the, you know, with Andy Reid getting over the hump, per se. You know, what are your thoughts about that and some of the things that come into play where, you know, I go back to the Eagles' victory over the Patriots a couple years back with the fact that, you know, they weren't playing not to lose. They were playing to win the ball game, and they were pulling out all stops. And sometimes coaches, you know, they play it too close to the vest, and all of a sudden they don't make the necessary plays, you know, that extra play that you need to get over a hump, like in a big game like this. Do you think Andy Reid has learned his lesson?
Yeah, I hope he has. And, Johnny, I think you're so right. There's very little in pro sports that's more unnerving, shall we say, or disappointing than to see teams playing not to lose. When you play not to lose, you're probably going to lose. You need to attack. He's got the type of team that will attack and can attack. And I think that's what we're going to see. I think that's also the approach that Kyle Shanahan has to take, which he has done all season, and he needs to not back off of that as well.
I mean, I go back to last week, you know, leading into the Titans taking on the juggernaut that we called the Baltimore Ravens, and one of the things that I was bringing up was the fact that here's Lamar Jackson, one playoff game, no success. He's thinking about it. He's young. It's not like he has a long track record, some wins, some losses. He has yet to achieve, the ultimate success, and that means winning a playoff game. And so that I look at this matchup for the Chiefs, you know, taking on the Titans and Patrick Mahomes. I mean, this team, especially everybody associated with this team last year, you know, there's nothing more gut-wrenching and pulling your heart out, breaking your heart, knowing you're that close to making it to a Super Bowl. Remember, the Chiefs have not been to a Super Bowl. You could count on your one hand. Number four. It's been a while. And so this team last year, so close of being in that position to go and not get it, I mean, that's a lot of fuel to the fire as far as those players are concerned.
And you learn from that, and I think they have learned from that. That's been true through much of Super Bowl history. Teams that have that kind of disappointment, and we're going back to the 70s and 80s now, they tend to learn from it, and they tend to prosper from it. And I think the Chiefs could be in that position. Having said that, I expect this to be a close game.
Patrick Mahomes leads the NFL with 3-plus yards on separation with his receivers. The Titans aren't known for getting a lot of pressure on the quarterback. How How are they going to survive that? How is Tennessee going to survive that matchup? Their secondary against the speed of Kansas City.
I think the Titans might have the best secondary in the football. And wow. I think that's how they'll do it. They are so impressed with me. I've seen their two games in these playoffs. And they had Tom Brady befuddled somewhat. Not somewhat, a lot. Now, you guys saw that game. And the secondary had a lot to do with that. And then last week, you know, I know Jackson had all kinds of great numbers in the second half, but the game was over by then. And I really like what the Titans can do in the secondary, and I think they will match up pretty well against the Chiefs.
That's encouraging.
Having said that, I think the Chiefs are going to win the game.
Well, that's discouraging.
You know, the other side of that, you know, we look at, you know, from a Green Bay perspective and talking about getting pressure. I mean, here's two guys that lead that Green Bay Packers defense. We're talking about two guys with 12 or more sacks going into this matchup back in the regular season. Ladarius Smith along with Preston Smith. I mean, to me, that's a difference maker of disrupting what San Francisco will be trying to do against the Packers on Sunday.
Yeah, the Smith brothers have been terrific. Zadarius probably belonged in the Pro Bowl. And I think that they can be difference makers. Again, a lot will have to do with how they can handle somebody like George Kittle if he's healthy, because he's going to be over the middle in their territory often, especially Preston Smith's territory. While Zadarius Smith is rushing the passer. One thing to remember, too, about the Niners is that Jimmy Garoppolo, he throws interceptions. And I could see the Packers picking off one or two in this game. Whether that's enough to put them over the hump, I don't know. But I think the Packers' defense has a chance to make an impact in this game.
Before we let you go, I know you're heavily involved with the Hall of Fame and all types of other things related to the NFL as well. You know, your thoughts about how this week played out with the way that, you know, here we are celebrating 100 years of the NFL and, you know, the great stories of players and individuals, contributors, finding out that they're getting into the Hall of Fame. But also, we don't remember that part. We remember how disappointing it was that Drew Pearson did not get the call.
Well, having done this for so many years and having been in the room last week when all the presentations were made, this was such a hard decision for us to do, 25 people on the panel, including a bunch of Hall of Famers themselves. I will say this, Johnny and Steve. I think every candidate in the finals, coaches, contributors, and seniors, will eventually get in the Hall of Fame. But you're limited on how many can go. And some of them, just to me, had slightly better resumes than maybe Drew Pearson did. And therefore, you wind up with the class that we had. And I'm very proud of what we did, and I'm very proud of the class we came up with. And I do think that everyone, not virtually, but every one of the candidates who did not get in will eventually make the Hall of Fame.
Do you think Ed Too Tall Jones will ever get in?
He's very borderline, and as more guys become available and recognized, including some of the old guys, you know, the old-timers we spoke about last week, it may become even more difficult. I've always considered him as a really, really good player, but not an all-time great.
Hey, do you guys make allowances for guys that played in the 12-game season versus the guys that played 16? Because that can really skew the stats.
Yeah. Absolutely. Statistics play a role, but they don't play, you know, the be-all and end-all role. And, you know, it's very important. And, you know, that's a great point, Steve. When people ask me who's the greatest player ever played, all I tell them is, go look at what Jim Brown did in 12-game schedule.
Right.
Yep.
He's
what?
The greatest player to me ever, and, you know, I don't think I'll ever see anyone who would surpass that.
You know, you brought that up because, you know, during the national championship game on Monday, college football released their, you know, through ESPN, their 11 best college football players of all time. And when Jim Brown got announced at number one, people immediately wanted to start throwing out stats. And it's like, first of all, it was an era that they didn't pass a lot. And they knew you were running the ball. So you had everybody converging on the one back who they knew who was going to carry the ball. and he still had success. I mean, it's a lot different. You can't compare what happened in the 50s and stats, especially in their particular case. They played 8 games in the regular season. So you can't compare that. You can't compare the 50s to, you know, what we're doing now with these offenses. That's, you know, you just got to compare different eras. Like if you wanted to compare Bo Jackson versus Herschel Walker, since they played in that very same time frame, then you can make an argument there. But if you try to compare different decades,
oh, guys in the 50s were selling concrete.
I mean, you can't go there, whether NFL or, I mean, because you hear it often too when people like, well, Joe Namath is in the Hall of Fame. Look at the stats. Look at the interceptions. It was a different ball game in the 60s. The AFC was wild. Then it was the AFL, but wide open, and they didn't care about interceptions. They were Mad Bombers, baby. And that's, I mean, Daryl LaMonica, that was his nickname. And so you just can't compare stats as far as with different decades. You got to compare them to the guys that they were up against.
Yeah, well, Namath is in for his impact as much as anything, and for the guarantee and that upset and what it meant to pro football, the entire sport. As to Jim Brown, did you guys know he was an All-American in 2 sports?
Lacrosse, babe. One of the all-time greatest lacrosse players of all time.
Well, you want to talk about how the game's changed. I mean, there's a picture making the rounds now of Lenny Dawson working a Fresca and a cig on the sideline. It was at Super Bowl I. Was that one of the early Super Bowls? I mean, the game has changed a little bit. The off-season conditioning and the fact that these guys aren't working 2 jobs.
Well, like I said, the Chiefs have made it to 2, but you can count on one hand when
they
play.
That is a classic picture.
The first one, they wasn't even called the Super Bowl then. So
that's right. You know that you mentioned comparing different years. People ask me all the time, who's the greatest quarterback ever? And I say the most successful quarterback ever is Tom Brady by the Super Bowl rings and all the championship games they've been to. But to me, the greatest quarterback ever is Otto Graham.
I knew you were going to say that. I had a chance to meet him, by the way, back in the Opryland when it was still an amusement park. They brought in about 30 of the all-time great NFL quarterbacks. And so you had Johnny Unitas, Otto Graham, Jim. I mean, the list went on and on and on. And I had a chance to meet every one of them. And I will always hold that. That's in the man cave, too, by the way, the autograph poster with
Johnny's going to start charging money for a charity to take a tour of his man cave.
When Johnny Unitas, by the way, signed this poster, Barry, he couldn't sign like how we would use a pen. He had it basically stuck between his knuckles, and it was like sticking out. And it was amazing how he learned how to sign. And it was. And of all the autographs, you know, you could easily make out Johnny Unitas. But he didn't sign it the way we would use a pen or a pencil. It was like stuck between his, I mean, I'm showing.
From getting his hand stepped on,
yeah,
or what?
Well, when he would throw the ball, you know, his hand would hit other helmets of the opposing defenses and stuff. And so it had its lingering effects over the years.
You see that from a lot of players, unfortunately, Johnny and Steve.